If you were walking along and there was a pit about 10 feet deep and you fell into it, it would not take very long to get to the bottom. But I'll tell you, it'll take you a lot longer to climb back out. That's sort of the story of what we call the prodigal son. It didn't take him very long to actually work through his inheritance and end up in a very bad job before he finally was able to make some decisions that got him back home. This is part of a series in Lent where we sort of do the spiritual journey of the Camino, this long 500-kilometer trail through northern Spain. And for centuries, it's been a spiritual journey. People would go on a pilgrimage, and they would take weeks and maybe even months to get there because it's a long distance. So we can't go there today, but we can do it in a spiritual journey, and we're taking different themes along the way. And today, the theme is lost. How do you get lost when there's a road straight ahead of you for 500 kilometers? And there's sometimes forests on the side, sometimes hills and rocks and mountains and plains. How do you get lost? Well, people are very creative. It's like Paul Simon's song, 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover. Well, there's lots of ways to get lost, too. You can be very creative about it. You can kind of wander off. You can decide that it's just prettier over there, and you're there, and then finally you don't know how to get out and to get back. And sometimes we are bumped off by circumstances in life, and you've been on this journey a long time, and then a circumstance in life bumps you off and you find yourself out there, and sometimes it's hard to make your way back to God. You know what I mean? Because you begin to say, why did God do that? How did I end up out here with I lost my job, this crisis, somebody in my family was killed in a car accident. You can list it all off. And somehow God gets involved in a bad way in that kind of story, and you find yourself not on the journey with God at all. But here we are. There's three stories here, one an ancient, one modern one. The ancient Middle Eastern story, apart from this particular story, is a story that is the kind of the narrative, the conventional one. A son grows up, leaves home in a very natural, there's nothing surprising about that. He gets a job, he saves his money, he invests his money. He has enough money to start a family. He gets married and has a family. And that's kind of the conventional story. It's not totally unlike today. But that's just remember that story, that narrative. The second one is a modern Western one. And one of the big differences is instead of it being a whole community or a whole village or a whole extended family kind of story, it really is a very individual story. It's about how I express my individual freedom, how I have my individual freedom and how I achieve happiness in doing that. And you say, oh, yeah, you're just spinning. So, well, just read Maclean's magazine this week, an article by Kathy Gulli, G-U-L-L-I. The title is The Secret of Happiness, Stop Trying to Be Happy. And she draws on a number of research projects and professors who make their money at spinning stories. And she decides that it is a very elusive reality. We are a culture of seekers. When I say we, not everybody, but it is a dominant part of our culture. Not only to be individuals, I have to pursue my goals, regardless of anybody else. And those goals usually are intended to make me happy, but usually they do not yield happiness at all. And if you think that this is kind of off, she points out that if you go to Amazon.ca and type in happiness, she found it brought up over 4,900 hits. That will tell you something about how happiness actually is at the heart of this culture that we live in. One bookstore poster she pointed out says, The poster says, "The science of happiness," as if it's a science. "Crack the code of your happiest self." As I just wanted to go like, but you see, Mick Jagger knows all about this. You know the song? "I get no satisfaction. I tried and I tried and I tried and I tried, but I still don't get no satisfaction." That is the cry of the modern world that is seeking to be happy, and it's not very good at it. And one of the worst things for a believer, a follower of Jesus, one of the problems is that the only kind of happiness that even the article talks about is stuck somewhere between your birth certificate and your death certificate. Nothing bigger than that. No God, no life after death, no big reality of the new heaven and the new earth and the new creation, nothing. They've done a number of studies. This period in human history is the most advanced, most comfortable period in all of human history, any place in the world. We have more money than they ever had before. More people have more money. We have medicine that keeps you alive a lot longer than you probably should. And all those benefits. And yet, when they do the studies of happiness, we are no happier today than they were 50 years ago. So somehow it doesn't seem to be working, but we still don't believe that it doesn't work. So the first story was that Middle Eastern story, ancient. Second one was the world that you and I inhabit. And even if you don't buy into the story, it's still the major narrative for the 21st century now. The third one is the one that you just heard about from Margaret and the Bible. It's the biblical story of the lost son or the prodigal son. This story, by the way, and the way this parable moves through, is the only story in all of the Middle Eastern literature from ancient times to the present in which a son asks for his inheritance from a father who's still alive and in good health. Did you get that? No other story in ancient Middle Eastern literature to now would ever have that narrative. Because the cultural offense at that time, because they respected old people, I'm going to move to someplace where they do that, is basically drop dead. You don't get your inheritance. You never ask for it. You don't get it until the father dies or is about to die. And here, he walks up and says, "Dad, give me the inheritance now. I know you're not dead, but I'm going to treat you as if you're dead. I want it." It's amazing. The father doesn't push back. He gives it to him. So now let's go to chapter 15 that you heard in the reading. Jesus is in a group of people and he's teaching. And look who is hanging around the little circle, paying attention to every word he is saying. The tax collectors and the sinners of all people. Now, if you're around a good church group and Jesus comes in, wouldn't you be a little bit annoyed if he was hanging around some people that you thought were the scum of the earth, that were scamming the tax system and the welfare system, and they did lots of things that you wouldn't do, and that a good, upright, moral person in our world wouldn't do. And so, in the crowd, in the group, you've got Jesus talking, and he's very interested in these people who are listening to him. But over here, here's the bishops and the cardinal rectors and a deacon or two. And they're all standing there having their cup of coffee or sherry. And you know what they're doing? They're the word in English that comes up in the Bible, murmuring. This happened to the children of Israel in the Old Testament. They murmured. You know, they muttered to themselves so that maybe not everybody could hear. And they complained, look who he's speaking with, the tax collectors and the sinners. And they were quite indignant about that. Jesus, having supersonic ears, he was able to hear what they were saying. So he said, walked over to them and said, okay, let me tell you some stories. I've got three stories for you right in a row, so pay attention. It's all about being lost. It's all about being found. And it's all about having a one heck of a party every time. So the first one was they lost sheep, the one lost sheep out of the 99 that was safe, and the shepherd goes out until he finds. Until the shepherd goes until got it? Until he finds the sheep and he brings it back. He's found. And then they rejoice. And then a gold coin. A woman loses a gold coin, a special one for her, and she's lost. And she goes and looks and looks and looks until she finds it. She does not stop looking. You got to get this. She does not stop looking until she finds it. And then she tells all her friends in the village, says, come, we're going to have a party. I finally found the coin. Then the third one is this one. The lost son. And it's a story of a father who waits in this case, and he waits, and he hopes until, when, how long? Until, how long over here? Until the son comes home. We're talking about God, you know that, don't you? We're talking about God. But the story does have a painful beginning. It's a young man in search of happiness. Here's the story. The son has it all. He is loved. He's accepted. But somehow, his father gets on his nerves, gets under his skin. No reason. The father doesn't do anything. But somehow the son, he just irritates me. He stifles him. I got so much to fulfill, I just can't do it here. He just doesn't have enough for it, although he does have an inheritance, so I need to talk to him about that. But I need to be free. And with his inheritance and my freedom to walk out of the village and go my own way, I will get it. So the goal is for him is freedom, that ability to do whatever you want. The father, on the other hand, his purpose and goal was not to latch him to the kitchen table at the house, but it was ability, rather, for him to become all he was meant to be, all that God wanted him to be. So it's not like he wouldn't be fulfilled, but this sense of individual freedom where you go off to do your thing, that was not the way to do it. So the son, he has it all, but then he takes it all. And I just told you, it offends the father, it offends the whole village, it offends the whole culture to take your inheritance before the father is gone. So the son leaves it all. He turns his back on the father, on the family, on the village. He goes into a what? A far country. And he turns his back spiritually on God. And then the son loses it all. So he... different translations say loose living. He was not very good at budgeting while he was there, and he had a lot of fun, apparently. But then a famine came along, and things dried up, including the money and the inheritance, and the only job he could get. Now, you got to understand this, the humor, but also the pathos and all of this. A young Jewish boy actually working on a pig farm. You get that? That is the irony of the story. Now, I don't know, you're all pious folk here, and I know that you love God and your neighbor. But you know, in a culture, most cultures, and a lot today, the neighbors would say, and some people would say, he got what was coming to him. Got that? He got what he deserved. Look the way he treated. He insulted his father. He embarrassed him. He was an embarrassment to the whole family and the village. And he took money that was not his. It was inheritance from his father. And he blew the whole thing. And here's where he is. He deserves it. And he's going to learn a lesson from all those bad decisions that he made. Doesn't that make you feel good to say that? But you see, God, not the neighbors, gets the last word on the story. So the son loses it all. But the son finally comes to his senses and he risks it all. He risks his pride. He risks his self-sufficiency that he had already lost. And it says he came to himself. In other words, kind of woke up and kind of got it. This is not working out. So he planned a scheme, not a bad scheme, but here's how he was going to do it. He said, I'm going to go back home. I'm going to come to my father and say, I am unworthy to be your son. But then he said, I'll compensate. He said, make me a hired hand. I'll be just like everybody else. Just give me a paycheck at the end of the week. That's all I'm asking for. I am not even worthy to be your son. I know that I've insulted you. Please take me back for that. But you know the story. The son, when he comes back, he's going to risk it all, his identity and pride and everything. But in the end, he regains it all. The father, when he sees him, overrides everything that he was going to say when he starts to say, look, please, I'm so sorry. Just, look, I'll... Father says, shh. By the way, the servant's with him. He says, go. He says, find that calf. He said, you know, the big one? He says, that'll take 100 people. So we're going to have a party. And he gets the ring on his finger. He says, go get that nice robe. He said, that I just bought the other day. And he says, and put this on him. So all of a sudden, he regains everything. He transforms that confession into an experience of grace, of divine grace. And the son, however, he comes into that. He has two encounters, not directly, but there's an encounter with two. One was with the father. I'll get to him in a moment. But the other one is the elder brother, his older brother. And so there's no mention in the story that they actually meet, you know, that. But he's back in the on the farm. And so the party begins, and the music and the dancing and the singing, everything is going on, and it sounds so wonderful, and he hears it. But the servant kind of said, what's going on? And said, well, you know, your brother, they're having a very big party for him. And he's back, and he doesn't like this. And so the father, they go back and say, he won't come to the party. And the father, get to what the father does. He goes out. And the elder brother says to him, I am the one that deserves the party, not the other one. I am the one that earned the celebration. You know this thing called entitlement? That's entitlement. And so he contrasts. The brother who squandered the inheritance, and by the way, just so you get the emotional bang for your buck, he calls, that is, said his brother was hanging around and spending his money on whores. That's an older translation before they got sanitized in their biblical translations. But you see, Jesus in the story never says that. He just says kind of loose living or in indiscreet living in terms of the way you spend your money. But this shows his attitude. And so they have the big party, but he says, this is so mournful. Lo, these many years I served you, and you did not give me a calf. Doesn't that sound sad? He judged his brother as not being respectable enough, have embarrassed and insulted and scorned the family. And he distanced himself from his brother because he says to his father, you know, I'm the one that deserves this son of yours. Get that? He didn't say my brother or my beloved brother especially is back. It's really great to see him. No, he said, this son of yours, I disown him, any connection between him and me. That's elder brother. Still hanging around, by the way, in the corners. But now to the second person that is affected, if like with this the son returning, is the forgiving father. He is the one that's the central character of this story, by the way, as Jesus tells the parable. It's the father's attitude, his character, and his behavior that is so stunning and so shocking and so surprising in that culture as it would even in our culture. And so this is where you're going to find out something about the God that you want to worship every Sunday morning. A couple of scenes here. One is the homecoming scene. I don't know how it was. It said the father saw him afar off. But you're dealing with a village, and it's a very small village. And so there's probably one main street in most of these villages, and maybe there's a little side street somewhere, but mostly you can throw a ball right down the center, and you can go from one end of the village to the other. And there's usually a road that's, you know, a lot of rural places, the road comes into like the Western movies, you know, and there's the road, and you see the horse and the rider, and first you see some dust, and then it just gets a little bit more until finally say, oh, that's the Lone Ranger. And they get close enough. So maybe one of the neighbors actually, you know, they look down the road a lot to see who's coming, because not many people come through that little village. And all of a sudden they see in the distance a man walking. It's bigger, bigger. Somebody finally says, usually the gossip in town is the one that kind of is up on everything. And he or she, I think that's his son. So they run off to him and say, by the way, there's somebody coming up the road. It looks a lot like your son. And the man is waiting. When? For how long? Did he stop? Until, right? Until he sees him coming. Now, the whole village has been scandalized. So the father, two things happen here. The father runs down through the village in the main street. It says he ran to meet his son. He didn't wait till his son came to him. First thing, that village has been scandalized. It's like running the gauntlet. He has to run down with villagers looking at him and saying to themselves, why is he doing that? This man, young man, should never come back into the village ever again after what he has done. He's not one of us any longer. We will exclude him. He's an outcast as far as we're concerned. But the second thing is, in an ancient civilization, the elder would never run in public. Now, he's not an Obama. You notice Obama, he runs quite a bit. He's coming up to the podium, or he's getting on the airplane, and he likes to jog along. He's a basketball player. That would be a scandal this time. That would be a scandal. He just didn't do that. And here the father, he lets go of all his dignity. He doesn't mind being humbled, not just humbled, but humiliated before the village and anybody else in order to get to his son. You understand that? That's God we're talking about. And then he puts his arm around him, and that kiss says it all. It's a kiss of reconciliation, just like the kiss of peace. We do a handshake when we pass the peace, but in ancient Christian churches, it would be a kiss that indicated that there is reconciliation, that there is no barrier between us. And God has given the kiss. So that's the homecoming scene. But then there is the elder brother scene. Refuses to come to the party. And this is the second time in which the father endures public humiliation. Because he could have sent a servant and said, you know, he is being stubborn and arrogant and he's closed-hearted against his brother. Let him come to me. No, the father marches right out into the field himself. No sending of the servant. And then these wonderful words, when the complaint comes, "Lo, I have served you for so many years and you haven't given me a party," he looks him in the eye and says, "Son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours." He humiliated himself, but he gave everything. So let me finish. Three things. You and I live in a prodigal son world. By that I mean it's a world that is relentless in some ways in our pursuit of happiness and individual freedom. And we're still coming up empty-handed. We're still coming up like sand going through our fingers, and happiness is eluding us all along the way. At least the son knew that there was a home to return to. At that, the beginning, it was just because he was desperate. But you see, that story, that part of the story is empty. There is no hope. You're just desperate. It's the end of things. The happiness doesn't come. Remember the old nursery rhyme? Little song. The bear went over the mountain. The bear went over the mountain. The bear went over the mountain to see what he could see. The other side of the mountain, the other side of the mountain, the other side of the mountain was all that he could see. Now, there is one hopeless little song. I'm serious. There was nothing. Once he got to the top of the mountain, the hope that he might have had that he was going to see something on the other side, nothing. That is the kind of pursuit that our culture is in. What a difference from Martin Luther King's story of being on the mountain and seeing, I've seen the promised land. That's hope. Brothers and sisters, you and I have quite a story there. The prodigal son world that we live in. But we are part sometimes of an elder brother church. Nobody here like that. We are easy at accepting people who look like us, talk like us, have the same kind of cultural values as us. But you step outside that world a little bit, and you might not find yourself so welcome. You're going to be cast with this tax collectors and sinners, and not in the good graces with the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the dignitaries of our institutional religion. So, where would we find ourselves? Which group would we hang around with? So finally, we proclaim a loving Father gospel. That's what we're doing this morning. You see, the father didn't give the son everything he wanted. The son, prodigal son, said, "Just look, Dad, just give me a job." And he said, "Shh." He said, "You're a son, and you will never lose that. You are a son." The elder brother, what did he want? He said, "Just give me a party. Just let me know how important I am to you. Just give me a party instead." He said, "You've got everything I have. You're always with me. I'm with you. You've got everything I have. All the inheritance has come to you. It's yours." It's interesting. Remember, the elder brother said to the father, "This son of yours." The father now speaks back to the elder brother and said, "By the way, besides all the inheritance, it's yours. He said, you're getting a little bonus here. You're going to get your younger brother back." He didn't want that. And he says, "This, your brother." Notice that? And it's interesting that in the last line of this parable, we had said that the son had treated the father as if he was dead. Now the father turns around and he says, "He was dead, but now he is alive. He flips it around. And then he said he was lost and is found. This story is unfinished. It stops there. And I think the reason why is because it's you and I that have to finish that story. It's one of those open-ended parables and stories that actually play out in the world of the 21st century. And so only you can finish it. But remember, you're on a spiritual Camino journey, pilgrimage. You know, that road is not always easy. It's going to be tough. You're going to get blisters on your feet. Your shoes will be hard, wear out. You're going to be tired. The sun is going to be hot at certain times. But it is the one road that is laced with mercy, love, grace, and the kiss of welcome by your Heavenly Father. Don't ever forget it.